Hello, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Ulster.
And this is All Access Star Trek, the brand new TrekMovie.com podcast all about the Star Trek universe on TV.
We are going to be reviewing episode 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks, but before we get to that, we're going to cover some of the Star Trek news that came out this week. The first thing I think we want to talk about is a new interview with Alex Kurtzman, who this time talked a lot about Strange New Worlds. His basic description of the show was that he affirms that it's going to be episodic, it's going to be optimistic, it's going to return to a familiar original series Planet of the Week kind of format, and that they won't have serialized stories so much, although they will have two-parters and sort of character, I guess, growth and evolution over the course of the show, like old school Star Trek.
He, in fact, used that phrase, it's a return to the format of the original series, and he called out the original series specifically. And you know, there's been a real positive fan reaction. I mean, we've heard stuff like this before from him and from Akiva, who is running the show, along with Henry Alonso Myers, who came from The Magicians. And what's good is that, you know, they're sticking with this idea that this show is going to be different than Star Trek Picard and Star Trek Discovery, going for this whole idea of each show having its own tone and style. But we've seen a huge fan reaction. It's the biggest article we've had all month of people just excited about hearing that they're going to get some classic Star Trek with Strange New Worlds.
I mean, the question is, of course, what is classic Star Trek? Because it's different things to different people. And we know, I'm a Discovery fan, but I'm not a fan sometimes of all the talk about it that sometimes substitutes for the actual things happening on the show that they're talking about. So I hope that this is true, because I could use some optimistic Star Trek myself. But we'll see. Right now it's talk. We'll see what happens when there are actually shows and scripts and when they start adding more characters.
I think your point on let's hear a little bit more about the show is well taken. They're going to start shooting in 2021, and we still don't know quite a few things about the show besides the three main characters. There's been no casting news, and it'd be nice to start filling out the roster of Pike's USS Enterprise.
And as much as I like those three lead characters, I'd like to see some diversity in there myself, so that it doesn't just end up being, oh, here's these two white guys that who are the stars of every episode, and then sometimes we work the women in. I know that was harsh, but I have certain concerns. But I do like all three of them, so as long as they mix them up with some other people, I think we'll be fine. I just don't want it to be traditional in terms of men and women and those kinds of things, which hopefully they won't do. That's one thing they've been pretty good about, is not doing that.
Obviously, they've leaned into diversity on all of their shows and kind of made it forefront, which is one of the reasons why, even though we kind of are excited about this fan notion that Jeffrey Combs could come in to play Dr. Boyce, I think the idea of another major white guy, older white guy character is probably unlikely. And one of our contributors has suggested, if you're looking for a character to bring in as a doctor, then why not Mbenga?
Yeah, I loved him. That slapping. It was fun.
Exactly.
And he was always like nudging Nurse Chapel. He was good. He had a lot of personality. He only had two episodes, but he was very memorable.
Right. And this would be a younger Mbenga, so maybe he's even, you know, more slap happy.
Yeah, no, I'm bringing on. He can slap Spock all over again.
The other biggish news of the week came from the Financial Times, which is the Wall Street Journal of the UK, essentially. And as we've been discussing, CBS All Access is essentially becoming Viacom All Access, with all this content being poured into it. And the news here is confirming that they definitely will be rebranding the service in 2021 when they relaunch the service. And the top of the short list of names right now is Paramount Plus.
What do you think about that name?
Well, as a Star Trek fan, you can't help but be nostalgic for Paramount. Paramount's always been associated with Star Trek since 1967, when Gulf Western, which owned Paramount at the time, bought Desilu Studios, which is, you know, before my time, but, you know, it's when you grew up, you always saw Paramount associated with Star Trek, both movies and television.
Right. Like you tell, they're on the Paramount set, on the Paramount lot. Like, that seems very familiar. I've always associated Paramount with Star Trek and also with just the old school movie studio vibe, which I like.
And they're probably right. It probably has the broadest appeal of all of the brands within the Viacom CBS portfolio. And they seem to be moving away from CBS because they consider it skewing a bit older. And I can't help but think that they want a brand that people don't associate paying money for, because CBS is just known as a broadcast television network.
Right. There's a reason NBC calls their thing Peacock.
Right. And Warner Brothers calls their thing HBO Max, because HBO is a premium service.
Right.
People are used to buying movie tickets. I think it's either going to be Paramount something, probably not Plus or Max, but Paramount something. Paramount Now, Paramount Beyond, you know, just something like that.
I vote Paramount Beyond.
Now, we're going to talk about this week's episode of Lower Decks in depth, of course, but there's a bit of Lower Decks news as well that came out of a Metaverse panel, which is kind of the virtual version of Emerald City Comic Con from last week, where Mike McMahon and some of his creative team got together and started talking a little bit about Lower Decks.
Yeah, like an actual writer from the show and people who create characters and direct, which is nice. I know Star Trek fans, we love our stars, but we also really like the behind-the-scenes people. So that was refreshing.
Yeah, it's worth watching the whole thing. We have it on the website. But some of the headlines is Mike started talking about what's coming for the rest of the season. And he started describing certain episodes, like a, you know, holodeck malfunction episode, and a trial episode. And then he zoomed out to say, essentially, they're doing greatest hits. They're doing their favorite episodes. So the trial episode is their version of Measure of a Man. The holodeck episode, I guess, sounds a lot like Elementary Dear Data, because it supposedly has some kind of villain associated with it. And that gives you kind of a philosophical approach to how they're viewing the show, which is, think of a great Star Trek episode, and they're going to try to do a Lower Decks version of that as they go on. He says the second half of the first season is his favorite half. We're still in the first half. And he says as it goes on, there's going to be more action. It's going to get wild. And at the end, it sounds like there's a two-parter at the end of the season, and it's... You know, it sounds a little best of both worlds. Yeah, I'm not saying it's the Borg, but it just, the way he describes it is, you know, that the season's leading up to something big.
And also, I like the way that he spoke about how they're going to do that, because his point was that fandom is very rich, I think is what he said, and there's a lot to choose from. And so it's not, we don't have ideas, we're going to what was there. It's that there's so much wonderful material to dig into or have a different take on. And so I think that's the kind of thing that he's talking about. He's talking about playing in the existing universe, but doing their own twist on it.
My only concern is I don't want Lower Decks to be a cover band. You know?
Yeah. Well, so that's kind of what I'm saying, is that I don't think that's what they... I think they plan to put enough of a twist on it that it hopefully won't feel like that.
Another interesting part of that panel was him talking about what they're not doing.
Yeah.
And they're taking it very seriously. They're taking canon very seriously. And they're taking the tone very seriously. So, for example, one of the writers in the writer's room has a sci-fi background, and she's apparently proposed some things that Mike has had to reject because he finds them too dark and nihilistic. So he doesn't want to break the tone of the show, which is a good sign.
Yeah, and he also said they're paying attention to canon. Things like they might want to put a Ferengi officer on the bridge, I think was his example, and then he remembered Nog is the first one. So I think that was a good choice. Good that he cares about canon even in this universe is good.
Now, we've already heard that there's going to be some character cameos on the show. So we know that's coming in season one. We don't know who yet. But he mentioned a couple that he wanted to do, but then felt he couldn't do within canon. And one was T'Pol.
Which was a surprise for me to hear. Yeah. I mean, she is my least favorite main Star Trek character in the entire franchise. Sorry, T'Pol. Nothing against the actress. I just hated that character. I thought she was terrible.
And but he thought she was too old, would have been too old, even though Vulcan's age, because he would want a young one and he didn't want to do time travel. So that's the other, maybe even more interesting, is he implied strongly that he wanted Wesley, but felt that Wesley wasn't available because he's traveling with the Traveler, which you could take one of two ways. Either it can't be that he's unaware of Nemesis, so he must have a very strict view that they never said in Nemesis why he was at the wedding, right?
Right.
So he must be taking an absolutist view of canon to say, since they never said he's back in Starfleet, even though he was in a uniform, he's still out there with the Traveler, and I guess he just popped in. You know, for...
But there's no reason he couldn't do that again.
Yeah. But he seemed to, you know, be ruling it out himself. I'm sure Will Wheaton would be happy to do it. I mean,
I'm sure he would.
He does the after show, you know, yeah. So he, you know, he's available.
I'm sure he'd also like a chance to approach that character in a slightly different, more grown-up way, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd be up for that. I'd be very happy to see that. And I think there's a way you can do it without breaking canon.
I mean, the last bit of news out of that was he said that as of last week, he was writing the finale for season two. We knew that there was a season two order, but we didn't know they were that far into it. So, you know, obviously after they write it, they've got to, you know, animated, and they've got to do all the voices, so it's still a long way to be done, but they're fairly deep into season two as of now.
Which, from a creative standpoint, cheers me, gives me good hope, because it sounds like they're on a roll, they're writing all these episodes, and now they're still rolling on that same wave of creativity. There's my optimism for you.
And with the world of COVID, live action production is something that's obviously a problem. They want to shoot Picard starting by the end of this year and Strange New World sometime next year, but who knows if either of those are going to happen. But for sure, they're making the second season of Lower Decks, and it seems reasonable that it would be ready sometime next year. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if, for no other reason than it just makes CBS's life easier that they give a green light for a third season of Lower Decks sooner rather than later. And in fact, recently Mike McMahon got a third season green light on his other sci-fi comedy, which is Solar Opposites from Hulu, who are facing the same issues.
Right. So, yeah, that makes sense. I hope you're right.
So look for season three in 2022. That's my prediction.
Okay. You heard it here first.
Okay.
Should we talk about Lower Decks? Are we ready to dive into this week's episode?
Okay, so let's talk about Temporal Edict. And I kind of love how Mike did a little fake out, because every fan, when they hear the word Temporal Edict, they're probably immediately thinking, what?
Time travel.
Yeah, that was not what they were doing at all. So, Lori, I have a lot of thoughts on this episode. but before I get into it, I'm curious to hear what you think, you know, overall of how you feel it fits in with the first four, because both of us have seen the first four episodes.
This was my least favorite of all of them. mostly because of the way the captain was behaving. But I did enjoy certain parts of it and thought there was a message in there that I liked. And there were moments that were very enjoyable. But overall, it was kind of the weakest episode. And I also definitely felt I missed Rutherford and Tendi, who didn't get to do very much.
It's kind of the opposite of last week. The captain had almost no role last week, and this week she was front and center, and in a half hour comedy or less, really, you kind of have to pick and choose who you get to be front and center with. It seems like Boimler and Mariner are always going to be front and center, so you start running out of people soon after that.
And pairing them up each with someone from upper decks was a good idea.
I like the pairings for sure. And this time they mixed it up, right? So Boimler and the captain, and we had Ransom and Mariner, and both of which are interesting dynamics. Here's the funny thing about this episode is that a lot of the issues, which you mentioned, I agree with. And a lot of the issues that I have with this episode are some of the issues I had with the first episode, in that it's a little too winky, a little too naughty towards Nod, N-O-D-D-Y, I guess, towards Star Trek. And this is written by Mike, who wrote the first episode. So he created a show which I'm really enjoying, but the two episodes that he wrote, I still feel like he's being a little too meta about Star Trek.
That I'm not sure I agree with you on. I mean, I liked the fast-paced Star Trek references, the piling on, all that stuff. I really enjoy. I think I'm the exception, but I love it. So I'm not sure I agree with you there. My issues were really with the sort of overall story, which required our captain to be not very bright.
So let's talk about that story. I mean, the main focus of this episode was with the captain and Boimler and what was going on in the ship, which was all triggered by her being upset that she didn't get to go to this big summit on Cardassia Prime. And that kind of sent her down a spiral, essentially.
Right. It becomes all about her ego, which she takes out on the entire ship.
Yeah. Not helped by the fact that this ship seems to have learned a lesson from Scotty, right? which we learned in Star Trek 3, that you are supposed to pad out your estimates. And so apparently everyone's doing this. And when you
become... Yeah, he explains it to Geordi when he guest stars on Next Generation. Remember?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He said, never tell him... Never tell them the...
Lottie. You know. Yeah. Don't tell them how long it's actually going to take. Which, right. Honestly, as a freelancer, I often do the same thing, by the way.
But doesn't this imply that every senior officer must at some point in their life or career forget that they did this when they were an ensign, right?
Yeah, I guess it does.
But she learns... about buffer time, which is the phrase they use for padding out their timings, from Boimler, of course, because he lets the cat out of the bag. And that has the captain issuing everyone pads, where they suddenly become obsessed with their pads. And I almost felt like maybe I'm reading too into this, but if you notice, everyone on the crew is constantly carrying a pad with their timers on it now. And maybe there's a little bit of an element of how everyone's obsessed with their screens. So everyone in the crew is constantly obsessed with their pads now.
That's a good take on it. Then it becomes a bit of a commentary too. I'll buy into that.
All right.
Because they're not paying attention to the bigger picture of what's actually happening around them. Nobody's noticed, hey, everybody looks exhausted and they're all screwing up and everything's in chaos because they're staring at screens.
Exactly.
That's a good take. Yeah.
And of course there's one person that's immune to all this, which is Brad Boimler.
Yeah, I really liked that aspect of it because it shows that he really is, he's a great Starfleet officer for all of his fussiness and love of rules, that he actually is good at his job and loves doing it, is enthusiastic about every task he gets, and doesn't need any buffer time.
Right. You know, he's asking for more tasks and
yeah. You know, and he has a little song. I liked his little song that he does when he's working.
There's a bit of a musical thread throughout this episode. It starts with the cold open is about music, and that was a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
With Boimler playing the violin. It was like, you know, the doctor boring everyone with singing, or Data trying to do jokes. It was kind of open mic night on the Cerritos. And then Mariner comes in and does a speed metal routine. So now you... to kind of really hammer home the point, one of these people is not like the other.
Right, and the wrong one's often going to get in trouble.
Yeah. And of course, Brad Boimler hummed the theme to Star Trek The Next Generation in the elevator.
Yeah, I thought that was cute.
So now we need an in-universe reason why that music exists. How does Brad know the theme to Star Trek The Next Generation?
So, that I don't know. It's one of those little nods they do every once in a while, like in the movie First Contact, when he says, when Zefram Cochrane says, "So you people are on some kind of Star Trek?"
Right, exactly.
And occasionally they talk about boldly going and things like that in the context of the show. So I saw it as something like that.
Well, you know, Brad says, space, the funnest frontier? This episode was full, and I would say too full. We may not agree on this. Those little winks.
Yeah, I like though. I mean, I'd prefer they didn't make winks as so many winks to it being a TV show kind of thing. But I still enjoy them, and I'm happy to have them packed in there. Bring it on.
But I agree with you that it's fine to have a captain want to increase efficiency. She's channeling a little Jellicoe perhaps. And, there's even a mention that there's a Delta shift, which means, you know, they've already implemented Jellicoe level shift rotations.
Yep.
But, and apparently Delta shift are the best.
Right.
And they rub it in.
But it's one thing for her to make a mistake, but this veers so far into crazy that it makes her look like a bad captain. And not just like someone who would let her own ego trip mess up every department and deck on the ship.
It actually flows all the way down to the away mission, because to go into the other store, we've got Mariner and Ransom who have to go do a second contact. I'm not sure if it was specifically a second contact, but it kind of felt like a second contact with Gelrakians from Gelrak 5. And when they go down there to the planet, they're supposed to show some totem, but an overworked ensign brings the wrong totem, and that
resulting
sets
in a lot of jokes about wood, by the way, about having wood.
Right.
So silly.
This planet apparently has no trees. It only has crystals.
Right.
And so they're very anti-tree, apparently, the Gelrakians. And to an incredible extent. And so when they see a wood totem from their sworn enemies, they just go crazy. Which would have never... And of course, and none of this, and that kind of sets the whole away mission off, but it all starts from the captain kind of working people too hard, and so they use that to set up all the plots for the show, none of which would have happened if the captain weren't going crazy.
Right, right. So it all stems from her ego being bruised, and that, to me, I didn't like that aspect of the story. Even though it led to some wacky, fun comedy.
the planetary mission was interesting because it felt very, I'm not sure if there's a specific original series episode. It's almost like a pastiche of many original series episodes with visits to primitive planets and primitive
people. Right, like a private little war is one. I mean, even if thematically it's not the same, the idea that they are communicating with people who have less advanced technology. Although these guys have spaceships, so they just like spears, right. I guess. They just like their crystal spears.
Right. Although the crystal spears had the ability to zap graffiti. They couldn't zap people, but they had graffiti technology, which is...
Right. Thank goodness.
But they did seem a little too primitive for being members of the Federation. And
they said they just signed them in, right? That was the phrase, I think, that they just right. joined.
Or were invited. It's unclear. But they didn't feel like a Federation member. Certainly the way they acted didn't feel very Federation-y. And the fact
their
that
methods
they,
of justice were questionable.
Right. Beyond, capital punishment by crushing people under a giant geode. Although I did like the nod where they're like, it was a constitutionally called for geode. So apparently in their constitution, it calls for people to be crushed by a giant geode.
I think they said to legally smush their criminals.
Right. So, yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of laughs in this episode. Absolutely. It's a funny episode. We're kind of picking on this and that. And I don't deny that I laughed. I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. It's just constantly you're going, well, but that this person's doing something really stupid. These guys don't feel like they belong in the Federation. So we're every once in a while you're taken out of it, but then you get back into it because it's funny.
Yeah.
So the Mariner and Ransom have a whole interesting dynamic going on the planet.
That was sort of the highlight for me. I really liked those two having their arguments. It had a little bit of a Riker Roe vibe, except less so because she's so ridiculous, Mariner. she's completely insubordinate to him at almost every step.
I think a conceit of this show is everyone on board the ship lets Mariner be the way she is because she's the captain's daughter. It's the only thing that makes sense because she should be constantly in the brig, even though she says she loves being in the brig, because she is just so insubordinate all the time that it would be impossible for her to exist as a character. So I guess we're just going to kind of accept that. But on the planet, she kind of turned that insubordination up to a level that was unseen before. She was calling him names and questioning his abilities, questioning his authority.
No, trying to overstep, trying to step in and do things instead of him.
Literally fighting with him.
Yes.
But I like your kind of, Roe Riker thing, because there's definitely, he's got a lot of Riker going on. I mean, he even had the stance.
Yes.
He's like got that down. And he used it multiple times, right?
Yes.
So he's definitely, obviously there's a lot of Kirk in him. He rips his shirt like Kirk.
Although also, sorry, a little bit like Groundskeeper Willie on The Simpsons, who every once in a while just tears off his shirt and he's all built. Right. It gave
super
me that
ripped.
Same vibe. Yeah.
Although that created a little bit of a romance hint.
See, I wouldn't call it romance. I would call it reluctant sexual attraction, okay. Which is why I liked it. I wouldn't have liked it if they were implying that these two really like each other. But what they each had a moment of being unhappy about being sexually attracted to the other one. Which
Fair
to
enough.
Me is funny and works.
But it feels like they might be setting up a will they, won't they vibe for the show. Which I kind of hope they're not doing.
But again, back to our friends Riker and Ro, the only time they finally did it was when they lost their memories. And to me, it feels like that kind of vibe, that they have a sexual attraction but wouldn't want to be in a relationship.
Right.
That's what I get from those two.
So because all this is happening on the planet, the ship gets literally boarded by the Gelrakians with their spears, because they can't even get the shields up. I mean, nothing's working on the ship. And
right, yep.
And here's where the captain goes from being a little crazy to downright pathological.
Well, she starts doing everyone's jobs.
Right. But
her flaw is that she's also timing herself. So she's applying this ridiculous policy that everyone else has to follow to herself in the worst possible situation.
And now, so you start thinking, how could she possibly not make it a focus to get the invasion under control? But she's so narrowly focused on having everyone meet their schedules that she demands they stick to their regular tasks.
Which again, I think is part of the point of the episode. And I was just sad that it had to be at the expense of her just being such a terrible captain. She did some terrible captaining.
Right. And the person that figures all this out and reminds her she's a great captain is Brad, who's the only person immune to all of this overworking.
In fact, it's the one time he really gets to be a great ensign and a great Starfleet officer, because he has no issue with any of the timing or loss of buffer time.
Exactly. It is like one of those episodes where everyone on the ship is affected by some alien virus and Data is the only one able to do anything.
Right. Or Seven of Nine, or whoever it is in their series, yes.
Right, except Brad is just so anal, such a nerd, that he's not affected.
He's ecstatic. He's singing, right. He's humming, he's dancing, he's calibrating, he's very happy.
So we've got these two crises, right? We've got the crisis on the planet, and we've got the crisis on the ship. And there's parallels with both, right? Where both resolutions have the ensigns teaching their senior officers these lessons. And I kind of like that dynamic of Boimler and Mariner having something to contribute.
Did Mariner teach Ransom something, or did Ransom teach Mariner something?
Well, it went both ways, and it was very quick. So Mariner was basically saying, Ransom, you've got to stop being so focused on protocol. And he's like, okay. And he stabs her in the foot.
Right.
Because he's convinced that she was just going to get herself killed.
Right. And it's his responsibility.
Right. And Brad, obviously, as we just talked about, convinces the captain. Now, there is at least with the captain side of this, something we talked about in the last episode that we really liked is the show wasn't falling into the trap of the angry boss and the subordinate. And although that isn't what we're having here, there's still kind of the stupid boss angle of this, at least on the ship. And, so that's something hopefully we don't see a lot more of.
Right. And I felt that they were trying deliberately to do the opposite with Mariner and Ransom on the planet, subverting the expectation that he's just going to be a big show off. He actually is great in this episode. Like, everything he does is kind of correct. He makes great choices. He wins his battle and he saves everybody.
Right. He wanted to win the day by speechifying, but he ends up having to fight using some Kirk techniques, but he doesn't go all lethal. So he's able to win the fight, but also win the day, as it were. But it's still a violent confrontation. But, you know, there's a little original series element of that.
No, and the movies are full of that. The movies are utterly full of let's have a big punching time for everybody. So that, I mean, it's the aspect I like least of Star Trek, except that I always enjoy Kirk Fu, which this was kind of close to.
But they just did Kirk Fu in the last episode, so, you know, it was kind of two Kirk Fus in a row. and there was some Kirk name dropping.
Yes.
So that was in my how many winks is too many winks category. The issue I had is that on the ship, the solution was also violence. And so when the captain says, okay, everyone, I get it. Buffer time's great. Figure out how to repel the borders. I guess I would have liked to have seen a next generation sciencing creative solution that wasn't just everyone
whacking
taking
them
with the pads. Right. Yeah. So it was very slapstick and everyone's making funny faces as they get hit. You know, you almost imagine, it's like, why weren't they dropping anvils on their heads? Because it was very Looney Tunes at this point.
It was, but if I want to go a little bit deeper, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for the moment. It's the pads that they were staring at that were making them unable to see what was going on around them and that had the timers on them. So then by smashing those, they're smashing the idea of what they were doing at the same time as physically smashing them. Or they got a bunch of them to fall in a hole that had been created by spilled acid or something like that. So it's almost like they took their bad behavior and their mistakes and specifically used them quite physically to conquer their enemies. But I don't really disagree with you, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they kept on talking about wood and crystals, and so maybe there was some kind of wood-related thing where they could have, you know, defeated them with wood somehow, there was no creativity, and that was the kind of the whole point of letting people have their buffer time so they could be creative Starfleet officers, so that there might have been a both funny and creative sciencey TNG thing to get out their way out of it. But then everything's fine. You know, everyone's now fine. They present the right totem, and everyone is now getting along, and, you know, there's nice resolutions with the two pairings. So you've got Ransom and
Mariner, and she says, I'm not going to press charges for the foot stabbing. But he's still going to press charges. And I got to say, I was kind of glad, even though I love her, because she deserved it. Not for the sleeves. I mean, that was the funny part, was that she's in trouble for not rolling down her sleeves. But she was definitely, you know, insubordinate the whole time, over and over, in a way that could lead to problems. So she did need some kind of punishment.
Right. And maybe she'll have learned a lesson, you know, as a good sitcom does. Although I think the sleeve thing is here to stay. I mean, that's part of her character design. So is she just going to end up in the brig every episode for not rolling down her sleeves?
I don't know. I like the sleeve thing too.
Yeah. And Miles O'Brien often rolled up his sleeves, and, you know, we'll talk about him a little later. But so it's not unprecedented, obviously. On the ship, Boimler and the captain have a lovely moment. She presents him a plaque. Very
Which
Star
is
Trek.
Another Star Trek tradition, yep.
She names a rule after him, which must be, you know, his dream come true, except the rule was a rule for people not to follow rules. So it's a bit of a paradox for him.
It's the exact thing that he would never want to be known for.
Exactly. And that's how the episode wraps up. Obviously is this joke that he's worried that it will become remembered, and everyone's like, don't worry about it. And then we jump forward in time to some unknown future date. And the Boimler effect is now considered an important part of Starfleet history, and he's considered the laziest person in Starfleet, but for some reason that also makes him revered at the same time.
Right. And a scene that reminded me very much of one of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Right. The one with John Huston as the lawgiver talking to the collection of ape children and human children.
Yes. It was with the statue of Caesar at the end.
Right. Because you've got a Borg kid there and some other Federation kids. So sometime in the far future, the Borg and the Federation are just going to bury the hatchet and say, you know what, can't we all just get along?
And send their kids to school together. Outside.
Exactly. And then because the show can't help himself, they dial up the reference meter. And here comes a giant virtual statue of Miles O'Brien, who's one of my favorite characters, who's considered.
Same.
And she declares the chief as one of the greatest Starfleet officers.
I think she says he's the most important person in Starfleet history.
Right. So that's true.
It is true. And I love that it just showed him standing behind a transporter console.
Now, I think a lot of people are going to view that as a reference to Chief O'Brien at Work, which is the popular webcomic that often finds the chief in funny situations behind his transporter room console.
We'll put up a link to that on the website because it's a very good, fun comic and people should be checking it out.
Oh, and they threw in Boimler for some reason had a giant bird on his arm, and they referred to that as the Great Bird of the Galaxy, which of course is a reference to Gene Roddenberry,
whose birthday we just celebrated this week.
I wonder if they timed it for that. Probably, obviously not, because the show was not supposed to come out as early as it did. So just kismet.
Yes,
exactly. So, Lori, what was your favorite joke of the week?
My favorite joke of the week, quickly to bring back to what I said last week about how the show's more fun to watch in a group. So when I watched it by myself, all the episodes we have, the first time I laughed out loud by myself was at the doctor when first she hissed like a cat and then she made a scratching post reference. Right. Something like, you look like a... And then she swore, which I won't do on our podcast, scratching post. And that actually made me laugh out loud by myself.
That was definitely good. It was like our only line of the episode, but it was good.
Yes.
I think my favorite was when Boimler tells the captain, this has been the best week of my life. Because everything is just so horrible for everyone, but he is just having the time of his life. And I loved his whole, you know, which was kind of part of his whole thing of humming along and everything. And it was, you know, there was so many great Star Trek references and maybe too many. But I love the show when it's true to the characters and they're finding humor within the characters. And I feel like we're really getting to know Brad and Mariner, and it was spot on for him, and it was very funny. It was a good character comedy moment for me.
Yeah, I like that too. And that he's just oblivious. The same way the captain's oblivious, he's oblivious. He just keeps going through his thing happily and doesn't pay attention to the fact that everybody looks insane.
So, this episode, zooming out, it was funny. I liked it. But it kind of is a bit of a warning, a little bit of a concern in they've set themselves up. And we talked about this earlier about how they've given themselves rules. And the rules for this show are that it's a canon Star Trek show. It fits into Star Trek. These characters, and Mike has been explicit about this, have to feel like they're members of Starfleet. And the universe needs to feel like it fits in Starfleet. And the previous two episodes did this. We, We talked about how all of the senior officers felt like they were in Starfleet. The planets felt like they were part of the Next Generation universe. You know, and yet there was still humor. So we're finding humor in that universe. In this episode, I felt at times for them to find humor, they were willing to bend, if not break, the rules to get to dig the humor out. So the captain had to move into stupid character moments where she just didn't feel like she could be in Starfleet. But if she didn't do those things, then none of the things in the episode would happen. So they had to break her to create the comedy.
Yeah, I agree. Unless in the week before with that transdimensional energy creature, I saw some interesting debates because it went through her as she walked down the corridor at the end. And some people thought it fizzled out and other people thought it actually infected her in some way.
Oh, now that is deep.
I'm trying to find a way that she's not just doing things as a bad captain.
Right. She's bad. This is like Lorca was Mirror Universe the whole time, you know, that, and that explains everything. So she's been possessed. Okay. Well, you know, then everything's fine.
I know, but then they have to carry it on. So I don't think that that's going to keep happening. Just a theory.
And then they really shot themselves in the foot with one line that was unnecessary. And that line was when Ransom says that they've invited the Galrakians. I think that's the name. If we've been saying it wrong all episode, I apologize.
To the Galrakians.
into the Federation. And I'm sorry. These guys do not belong in the Federation. Sure, you can hang out with them, you could trade with them, whatever, but they are not Federation material at all.
Yeah, I agree.
Capital punishment, racist, violent. You know, I mean, they're just, you know, they're not ready.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They're not ready.
But again, it was a good source of humor, right? So I almost don't know why they had the line in there about inviting them into the Federation, because all that did was make you wonder the whole time of how could these people possibly be in the Federation.
I mean, that is the kind of thing that's going to bother Star Trek fans like you and me. And I'm thinking when I watch the episode tonight with my family, that probably that won't bother them at all.
Oh, yeah. I 100% agree. And I noted this in my review. These issues are for fans only because the humor was there. The jokes were there.
Right.
But the conceit of the show is it's supposed to be Star Trek. And I feel like having a lot of Star Trek references, it isn't what makes the show Star Trek. It's feeling like we're in the universe. And there's so much about the show, the production design, the way it's shot, is supposed to make us feel like we're in the Next Generation, but there's these funny moments. And I think that really worked well in the first two episodes and often in this episode. But every once in a while, when it falls out of Star Trek, it's for that moment, it stops being funny because you're like, that's just stupid.
Right. And last week they did such a good job with the whole Rutherford thing of showing how you can find comedy and be very Starfleet at the same time.
Exactly. I would say, you know, of the four episodes we've seen, this is my least favorite. So we could say for anyone else who agrees with us that things get better next week. You know, spoiler alert. And hopefully beyond as we get into the final six episodes, which Mike has already said are his favorite. So things could only get better from here. So I'm still very optimistic about the show. I still love Lower Decks. I still feel like it's, you know, the perfect thing for the time that we're in, which is a great distraction, a great little piece of entertainment to keep us smiling during these times where there's not a lot of reasons to smile.
Yeah, I agree. It's exactly what we need right now.
And that's it for Temporal Edict, right? It's That's all I've got to say about it.
Yeah, I think that's it. So we have a few, I don't know, do you have one today? We like to, at the end of our podcast, we like to just bring up something about Star Trek that we found out in the world that we think is worth telling you about. So Tony, do you have something this week?
I have a today I learned kind of thing, which I learned a couple of days ago. It's comes from a book called Typeset in the Future, which came out a couple of years ago by a guy named Dave Addy. And he has a blog of the same name. And it's just super obsessive about typography. And he noted something that's been staring at us for years, which is in the original series, the kind of iconic Star Trek typeface. In the second season, there's a mismatch when they added the bit about also starring and DeForest Kelly, right? And the typography is slightly different. And so there's just a little bit of a mismatch, a kind of glaring error to typography nerds that I guess has been bothering them for decades. We'll have a link to this. When you see it, you'll go, oh, God, because one's got rounded corners and one's got squared off corners. It's like, how could they possibly have done that? But it's been there and it's still there and it will be there forever. But it's a mistake. And, you know, it's just one of the many things this guy gets into looking at the typography for the whole franchise. So it's worth reading his views. And it sounds like I've ordered the book. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Oh, nice. Cool. I'd like to hear what you think about it. All right. Well, mine is totally different, which is, you know, Trek Twitter is filled with lots of interesting people to follow. And my current favorite is a young law student. She's 22 years old. Her name's Olivia. Her handle, I'll put it on the site, but it's OliviaJ_8 for anyone who's looking for her. So she lives in London. She tweets about Star Trek, about all of it. She's watching all of it. She's very funny. She's very smart. She makes me laugh out loud. She uses her law student background because she analyzed, there's a whole copyright case about the tardigrade on Star Trek Discovery, which I won't get into, but she did break it down based on her expertise and knowledge as a law student. The first thing that ever caught my eye that she posted was the question, which Star Trek character would make the best grilled cheese sandwich? And that led to a very lively discussion between me and my husband. He was Data. I said 7 of 9. I won't get into why. But I thought it was such a great question. And she has this way of looking at Star Trek in a very new, fresh, funny way, but with lots of love. And she makes me laugh. So I'm going to recommend that people follow her.
Yeah, I've seen some of her stuff. And it's both insightful and fun. So it's... I love some of the great characters on Star Trek Twitter, and she's one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So she may notice a boost in followers this week. I hope so, because she deserves it.
And I think that's it.
Yeah.
For our third full episode of All Access Star Trek.
So exciting.
Join us next Friday, as you should every Friday, for a review of the next episode of Lower Decks and a roundup of all the news for the following week.
All right, we'll see you then. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening.